This is MMA Torch Editor-in-Chief Jamie Pennick, joined once again by Mike Jarsalik for a review of UFC 85 coming to us from the O2 Arena in London. Mike, this fight didn't have any title fight. We had the change of main event multiple times beforehand coming into this show. But in my opinion, I thought they pulled out a hell of a show for a lot of last-second stuff with a lot of just solid fights. No great fights, but a lot of average to good fights on the show. Your overall thoughts on this and how it came across?
It was a good way to spend a Saturday afternoon. I mean, I watched a show live, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I didn't have a lot of people calling me up before the show saying, hey, are you getting the event? You mind if I stop by? So there really wasn't that much excitement among the casual fans, but I thought it was overall a very good event.
Yeah, definitely. I caught this one on tape delay because I had a wedding to attend yesterday, so wasn't able to watch it live, but watched it earlier today. DVR is a wonderful thing. But we start with our with Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg actually introducing the show and talking about how Thiago Alves was unable to make weight, and they weren't sure why. So Matt Hughes still took the fight, and they fought this main event at a catch weight of 175, as Alves had come in at 174. First things first, we should touch on that here. I thought it was a good thing of Alves to apologize in his post-fight comments and kind of explain himself a bit. He did have his ankle taped up. He said that he had sprained his ankle and was unable to do the running or anything for cutting that last weight. So it's a little more inclined to give him a little leeway since it hasn't happened for him before here. But still disappointing coming into this fight to have it be a catch weight.
Yeah, it was. I have a hard time forgiving Alves for doing that, just for the fact that there are other ways to lose weight except for running. One of the things that you can do is just get on the elliptical, or you can do stuff like wrap yourself in saran wrap and sit in the sauna for hours. There's also other things such as super hydration, where you can intake so much water, and when you get into the sauna, it makes it easier to sweat off. I mean, there's really other techniques he could have used to drop the weight. Plus the fact that he was caught using a diuretic back in, I believe it was December 2006, to make 170 pounds in order to fight Tony D'Souza. It kind of makes it me question whether Al should be a welterweight fighter or not.
Well, it's very true, very true. And that's a point that was brought up by both Rogan and Goldberg throughout the show when they were talking about it. And it's very true, especially it's happening more and more, it seems, recently with people trying to fight at certain weights and just not being able to cut down to that weight. And, you know, maybe he should be fighting up at the middleweight. It might be easier for him to get to that and stick with that. But still, give it to Hughes for taking the fight and keeping the main event what it was announced for the last 2 weeks, you know, since it's been changed about 50 times. But give it to Hughes for at least taking the fight and stepping up. And, I mean, Dana White said it in the pregame. Matt Hughes isn't one to back down from a fight, and he'll take them all. And he did take the fight, and it was definitely disappointing. But we might as well just talk about that fight right now. We've got our main event, Matt Hughes against Thiago Alves. Just goes a minute into the second round, and Alves looked impressive against Hughes here, and that finish was kind of nasty with him landing the knee and how Hughes went down onto that and twisted his left knee there and took a few more shots. But Alves was in control throughout this fight, first round into the second round, and I just thought good KO by Alves. Not a great fight, but one of the better fights on the show and a good fight.
Yeah, I thought it was a passable main event. Thiago Alves, he really won the first round, okay? He landed some good shots on Matt Hughes throughout the round. Hughes did get a takedown, though, and was able to hold Alves on the ground for a while, but he really wasn't able to do much damage from the top. Diego Alves was able to get back up to his feet, and he was able to land some punches near the end of the round, which pretty much stole the round for him. The other thing with Matt Hughes was he seemed to be frustrated really early in the fight. We saw him pulling guard, which he hasn't really done that much in fights throughout his career. The only time I can really think of Matt Hughes pulling guard is when he was frustrated by George St. Pierre.
Yeah, no, definitely. That was something kind of surprising to see, especially that as early as he pulled it in the first round. And, I mean, he got cut here early, too. That played into most of it. Alves cut him early and stayed on him. And in the second round, Matt was busted up quite a bit. Alves just looked really good both on the ground and standing up. He really did look not dominating, but he looked in control throughout.
Yeah, Alves did a very good job of playing open guard with Matt Hughes. When Hughes was took him down and was trying to pass, Diego Alves was able to, hip escape back to guard on every single occasion and really prevented Hughes from getting to a dominant position. It was really great stuff from him.
Yes. We'll head back to the beginning of the show in our first fight, Brandon Vera against Fabricio Werdum. This was one of the two fights that was hyped up on the pregame show, the half-hour preview show. It was a good fight for the first round. Werdum looked really good in the first round, but this is a definite controversial stoppage with about 20 seconds left in the first round. Werdum you got to give him credit for what he did here because he swept the leg and got a nice takedown. He stood up and then passed right into the mount and started raining down punches until the ref stopped it. Now, Vera was defending himself. He looked like he could have ridden it out another 15, 20 seconds and didn't look like he was taking that much damage. And the ref still stopped in and stopped this fight. And I know Vera was immediately coherent, immediately up, immediately upset. And the crowd didn't like it one bit. But as Joe Rogan said to the crowd in the post fight, don't knock it on Werdum. He did what he had to do to get himself in the position to have that fight stopped. But it was just kind of an unfortunate finish because I thought it could have gotten a lot better going into the second round and beyond with how they were in the last half.
Yeah, looking back at the fight, one of the things with Fabricio Werdum it's really amazing is how he maintains mount. In my opinion, Vera was stuck on the bottom, and he wasn't going to be getting out for that next 20 seconds. So he was going to be taking a beating until the round expired. Could he have survived? Possibly, but we don't know that. So I would have to say that it was a quick stoppage. But Fabricio Werdum did a tremendous job throughout the fight. He got Vera on the mat on two occasions and was really able to get by his guard at will and pass into side control, and then had a real easy transition to get into mount too. He just did a great job on the mat, and he really has proven himself to be one of the top contenders in the heavyweight division. And he beat Brandon Vera at jiu-jitsu, which Brandon Vera isn't too bad at. I mean, he has submitted Suaria Silva in the past. So he's no joke on the ground.
No, definitely. We get to fight number two, Nate Marquardt against Talis Laitis. Another fight not without controversy. I thought this was, myself, I had it scored, if without the deductions, it would have been 30-27 Marquardt. I had him taking the first round, not by much. It was definitely a round that could have gone either way, and it was evidenced in the split decision, but I thought he did enough to defend on the ground, and he landed some really good shots of his own in the first round, despite getting knocked to the ground. And again, he defended Laitis full mount and got his bearings back, and just really defended on the ground really well in the first round, and that's why I thought he took that. Of course, he lands the knee to the head, the illegal knee to the head early on in the second round, and Herb Dean was right there and deducted a point from Marquardt, and I thought Herb Dean handled this really well by making sure that Leitis was all right to continue, making sure he had plenty of time to recover. Leitis looked like he was all right, and they kept going, and Marquardt just rushed him quickly and took him down, and just was landing a whole bunch of shots from the top pretty much the rest of the round. And again, it was straight 10-9 round, close to a 10-8, I thought, with Marquardt doing pretty much everything. But of course, it brings it down to a 9-9 with the point taken away. Then in round three, we get Leitis getting taken down again. Marquardt defending against the triangle, Marquardt landing a whole bunch of shots. And as he's elbowing Leitis, Dean stops it, says that he landed a blow to the back of the head, which looked on replay like it was straight from the side, and took away another point. Marquardt again just dominated this round, and it was another 10-9 round, which makes it another 9-9 round because of the point deduction. Two of the judges saw it 28-27 for Leitis, so it was split decision for Leitis, and kind of disappointing for Marquardt because he definitely dominated the fight, and I don't think loses much because of the loss, because he showed that he dominated. It was the point deductions that put it in Leitis's favor. Mike, your thoughts on this match, how it came across for you, and your thoughts on the point deductions here.
Well, I gave the first round to Tally's Leitis for the knockdown and controlling the position through a good portion of the first round. The second round, though, was it was a 9-9 round, in my opinion. I didn't think Marquardt did enough in order to get that 10-8 round, which would have been a 9-8 due to the point deduction, just because it's very hard for me to give someone a 10-8 round when there's a foul that has so much to do with the round. It was pretty obvious that Tally's Leitis was staggered after the knee, and it's really hard for me to dock him the extra point just because Marquardt threw an ill-advised knee. The third round was it was definitely Nate Marquardt's round, and the point deduction in the round was very questionable. It looked like the elbow hit more near the ear rather than the back of the head. And it probably should not have been a point deduction, at least looking at the replay. But, you know, it's referees are only human, and, hey, they'll make mistakes too. But it was overall a very good fight, and, you know, probably my favorite fight of the show. And I think UFC came out looking pretty good here because you got Tally's Leitis getting the win, and he's someone that has yet to fight Anderson Silva. And I see a lot more interest in that match than a rematch with Nate Marquardt.
No, I think you have a point there. Fight three was one of the preliminary fights, Luis Cain against Jason Lambert. Lambert basically just came out to swing wildly, and he got caught hard three times and went down on multiple occasions, and Cain just stopped it. 2 minutes into the round, Lambert was not really all that impressive here compared to what he has done in UFC in the past. I thought he came out really sloppy and just kind of swinging wildly, and he got caught multiple times. And after the first one, it seemed like it was just a matter of time, and it didn't take very long. But Cain looked really good with those three knockdown punches and made it an exciting one-round fight.
Yeah, Luis Arthur Cagne is he's one of the big strikers that is coming up in the light heavyweight division, and he's had some some trouble in the UFC so far. He was beating James Irvin back in, I believe, December, and threw a knee on the ground, which knocked Irvin silly, and the fight ended up being awarded to Irvin by DQ. But he came out here, and he looked a lot more under control against Jason Lambert, who, like you said, just looked really sloppy. He's a veteran. He has over 30 fights in his career, and he just didn't look like he belonged in the cage on this night. It was a very bad fight for him. It seemed like he had a one-dimensional game plan in order to just go out there and throw strikes to the body. He did not keep his hands up, and he ended up getting caught multiple times and put down multiple times for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, again, he just, Kanye looked good. Lambert didn't. It was kind of a mismatch here, and that's just how it went. Brings us to fight four, Marcus Davis against Mike Swick. This is a three-round fight that Swick pretty much, he I wouldn't say dominated, but he did enough to win each round. Got the point deduction in the third round. It's kind of a boring fight on some levels, but Zwick looks more comfortable at 170 pounds than he did at 185. So I just thought it was a decent fight for Zwick. Deserved win. He did a lot more than Davis did. Davis really didn't get much going at all in this fight. And it was a unanimous decision for Zwick, which I completely agreed with.
Yeah, Mike Swick, I thought, looked really good in the fight, especially working from the top. Marcus Davis, he has a very active guard. He trains jiu-jitsu at George Gergel's school. And in my opinion, along with Dustin Haslett, he's one of the two best jiu-jitsu guys there, and has really translated it well into MMA. And Mike Swick just did a tremendous job controlling him on the mat.
Yeah,
I was a little surprised with Davis' game plan, though. I thought that he would like to stay on the outside and try to strike with Swick, and maybe give up a little bit of reach in the process. But you know, he does have professional boxing experience and should be able to keep Swick at a distance. But he seemed to want to work more on the inside. And he did have some success getting into the clinch and doing some dirty boxing in there. But it was pretty much a completely dominant performance by Mike Swick.
Yeah.
The second round could have really went either way, though, because Swick spent a lot of his time on top and really didn't do much damage. Marcus Davis did land some strikes on his feet that round. And he was able to pretty much nullify Swick on the ground. So I could see someone giving Davis the second round. But other than that, it was a great performance by Mike Swick.
Yeah. Brings us to fight five, London zone Michael Bisping against Jason Day here, or England zone, I should say. Bisping, this is a very dominating performance from him. Only a second, I believe, second fight dropping down to middleweight, and probably as good as Michael Bisping has looked in the UFC in this fight. He's just dominant until finally throwing shots from the back, and as Day tried to get up, he couldn't, and Bisping just continued throwing shots until the ref stopped it at 3:42 of the first round. Exciting stuff from Bisping. Only went one round. It wasn't a great fight. They didn't really get much going on his end of it, but Bisping, complete dominating performance, and I think the best he's looked since he's been in the UFC.
Yeah, it was a very good fight for Michael Bisping. The one thing that amazed me about this fight was Joe Rogan talking up Jason Day's guard. It was it's just because Joe Rogan trains at Eddie Bravo's school, and Eddie Bravo came up with rubber guard. Jason Day does rubber guard, and he was talking up his guard the whole fight, and it was just Bisping was able to completely nullify rubber guard. He was able to stand up, work from an open guard, and just throw punches at will down on Jason Day, and it was a very impressive first round stoppage.
Yes. Main event aired after that fight, and then we got two preliminary fights from earlier in the night to end the show. First up was Matt Wyman against Thiago Tavares, and this was a hell of a fight. Wyman picks up the KO at 157 in the second round here, but the first round was back and forth. They're exchanging punches from the top and the bottom. Wyman was doing a lot of work from the bottom, almost got a submission himself, and continued trying to attempt submissions from the bottom. He kept working on his back and just kept landing shots on the bottom and did an excellent job of holding off Tavares from his guard, and definitely won the first round for me. In the second round, he came out swinging. Tavares hit him with a huge right, but and caught him off guard with another shot. Then Wyman landed a hard one to the face and cut a leg off a head kick and took him down, went for a submission, popped up and landed a bunch of shots, and then smashed Tavares with a huge right hand as they were standing from the clinch, and that was just a major right hand. And Tavares went straight down, and he was out clearly. Big KO win for Matt Wyman.
Yeah, Matt Wyman, I can't say enough about how good he looked in this fight. He got taken down early, but he was able to use his guard to control Thiago Tavares, who is a much better jiu-jitsu player than Matt Wyman is. I was, you know, I thoroughly impressed with how well he controlled him. He tried submissions from the bottom. He was striking from the bottom. And while the round probably went to Tavares on all the judges' scorecards, Matt Wyman really frustrated him and really did a good job of keeping the fight close at that point. The second round, Wyman, you know, recovered well after getting hit with a hard shot at the beginning of the round and ended up fighting his way back and knocking Thiago Tavares out, which it was an amazing fight overall. That and Ladies Marquardt were the two fights that made this show worth seeing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The final fight of the night, final prelim, was Martin Kampmann against Jorge Rivera. Another great fight. One round, it was impressive from Kampmann here. He kept stringing together different submission attempts until he finally locked in the guillotine and made Rivera tap. It was just pretty much what it was. There wasn't much else to this fight other than about three or four different submission attempts kind of stringed together in a little chain that Rivera just couldn't get out of. He got out of one and got caught in another one until he was forced to tap almost 3 minutes into the round.
Yeah, Martin Kampmann is a very underrated fighter in the middleweight division. He had a very good fight with Tally Blades where he beat him up back at, I believe it was the Ultimate Fighter 4 finale, where he just dominated Ladies the whole fight. And then he also beat Drew McFedries back in March of 2007 in Columbus, which he dominated McFedries on the ground and choked him out with an arm triangle. And after that, he was supposed to fight Rich Franklin at UFC 72, but he pulled out of the fight due to a knee injury. And this was his first fight back. The one thing about Kampmann is he's very well-rounded. He's going to pose a lot of trouble for people on their feet, and he's got really good submission skills on the ground, too. He did a very nice transition from the arm triangle into the guillotine choke when Rivera escaped and tried to go for a leg. It was just a very solid performance by Martin Kampmann, and hopefully he'll be able to work his way back up and be able to get a title shot pretty soon.
Yeah, definitely. They finish out the show by showing us the submission of the night, which came on an unaired prelim, as Ron Carnero got tapped by Kevin Burns in a very, very nice triangle. Kind of disappointing not to see that fight with that finish, but not sure what you would have taken off of this show. of the prelims that they did show. But Mike, your final thoughts on the show, and thoughts going forward into UFC 86, July 5th with Griffin and Rampage.
Well, with the Rome Carnero-Kevin Burns fight, I think that Rome Carnero, being a world-class jiu-jitsu player, it's completely pathetic that he would get tapped out by a blue belt with a triangle choke. It's something that's just hard for me to fathom, since I see what it's like for a blue belt to roll with a black belt, and that just seems to be an impossibility to me for a blue belt to be able to choke out a black belt. But overall, the show was, you know, like I said before, a very good show for being one of the English shows. We didn't get to see very many of the European fighters that haven't yet trained in wrestling fighting on the show that we normally see. But overall, I would say that it's worth checking out if you haven't gotten the chance to yet. Tally's latest, Nate Marquardt, great fight. Matt Wyden and Tiago Tavares was a great fight. And the main event was a decent fight for being put together on short notice, and having a fighter that was injured, not making weight. And Matt Hughes needs to be commended, too, for taking a fighter to catch weight. But going into the next UFC event, which is UFC 86 with Forrest Griffin against Quinnen Jackson, I think it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm definitely taking Rampage in that fight. I don't see Forrest Griffin having the ability to stand on his feet and throw with Rampage like he normally does. It just seems like Rampage is too skilled of a striker, and I think it'll turn out way too much like, say, a Floyd Mayweather or Arturo Gatti fight from a few years back.
Yeah, that's definitely the way I see it. I just Forrest is going to come in with a lot of fanfare. He's going to come in ready to fight, but I don't see him having the tools necessary to strike with Rampage, and I don't know that he's going to be able to finish him any other way. Well, Mike, thank you again, and we will talk to you soon. We'll have text roundtables up on the website shortly. Thank you for joining us again here on MMATorch.com.